Data Doctors, report to the studio. You're live in 2 minutes.
This is the Data Doctors 2 minute drill.
So the Facebook IPO is out, off and running, and we just lost a citizen over it.
What are you talking about?
The co-founder, Edward Severin, Eduardo Severin, a Brazilian national who gained citizenship.
Yeah, he became a citizen.
Went to school here in the United States.
Right.
Co-founded a relatively large company and decided, you know what, to save some money, I'm going to renounce my citizenship.
You know what, that just ticks me off. First of all, you made that money because you became a U.S. citizen, because you co-founded this American-based company, you went to school here. How dare you walk away, pay your taxes?
So the backstory on this is that he's been living in Singapore, I guess, for the last year and a half.
Right.
He applied to have a citizen. He basically turned in his passport sometime last year. So it's not like, I think the way the media is portraying this is, a week before the IPO, he turned in his passport.
Ken, he knew this was coming. This wasn't a surprise that he was going to become a billionaire.
Well, of course not, but is this just an example of an entrepreneur taking advantage of tax laws to his own benefit? I mean, it's these are the rules, and
right.
If you can do this to skate taxes, why wouldn't you?
It sucks, it's spineless, and it's un-American. And I don't care if he's Brazilian, because he's an American. He became a U.S. citizen, and now he's screwing the country he became a citizen of.
And also made all his money on. But the question that this brings up for you and for everyone else out there, would you renounce your citizenship for $1 billion?
In a heartbeat.
That's the problem.
I'm sorry.
Given the same situation, I think most people go, me too. Drill.
Stand by.
Cue intro music in 5 seconds.
4, 3, 2.
Live from Data Doctors HQ.
This is the Data Doctors radio program, delivering tech knowledge for your technology.
That is what we're here to do. It's time to listen, laugh, and of course learn here on the Data Doctors radio program.
That's right. Every week during the week, we help thousands of people in our stores and their offices and at homes all around the country. And then we bring that experience to the radio to see if we can help you all.
We are the Data Doctors. Ken across from me, Brandon, MIA today. And we're here to provide you education and entertainment. We like to call it edutainment.
Yes, he turned 28 this past week. He's a self-made billionaire and he wears a hoodie. Now he's running the most connected public company in the world. Yeah, you know who it is.
Plus, you feel the need for speed? We have a cool solution.
So, how do you search smarter? Google has it figured out.
Data Doctors radio program.
Ken, this week, Google announced the smartest thing I've seen come out of Google in a long, long time.
You mean more smarter searching?
Yeah, you know, so Google obviously is the de facto search tool. I mean, there isn't a person out there that I know of that doesn't use Google on a daily basis if you use the internet, except maybe the people who work for Microsoft and have to use Bing because it's the default there.
Well, they may use Bing, but they're still going to run across something that Google has influence on, maps and those kinds of things.
So over the years, we've talked about on the radio how, you know, people, when you search for things, people necessarily don't think like computers. And sometimes your searches give you these really weird results. Like, for example, if you're searching for the word kings, it might pull up the Sacramento Kings. It might pull up a Roman king. It might. What king are you looking for?
Well, Google can't read your mind.
Right. So now Google has gotten smarter with this new search tool that's basically a knowledge graph. What it's going to do is when you type in a search inside of Google, and by the way, this is going to roll out. So if you go to Google today and you don't see it, don't worry. By the end of next week, you will.
He's coming.
Yeah. They're rolling it out slowly across the U.S., across the world, actually. And what you're going to see now is this beautiful pop-up window. That's going to, when you type in the word king, for example, will then say, are you looking for the Kings sports team? Are you looking for Kings of Europe? Are you looking for Kings of Leon? And so it will help you define your search. But the other cool thing about it is, if let's say you're doing a research paper and you're doing something on the Renaissance period and you type in Renaissance period and here comes a picture of an artist from the Renaissance period. If you only know this one artist, that's not going to be enough to get you that information. But when you click on it, all of this new info is going to filter in all of this content from the Renaissance period for you.
Right. It's going to say people that searched for this artist also searched for these artists.
Right. So now
this is cheating.
It's not cheating. You know what? Google has gotten so much smarter. This to me is a clear reason why encyclopedias have gone the way of the dinosaur.
Well, encyclopedias are irreverent.
Irreverent. You're irrelevant. Not making fun of your Japanese heritage, are you?
No. They're just irrelevant.
Irrelevant.
Yeah, one of those.
One of those.
I mean, that has been the case even with this convoluted search.
Sure.
Now, here is my hypothesis on why they're coming out with this modification.
Yes.
There have been a lot of people that are up in arms about the fact that if you and I search for something,
yes,
from our computers,
uh-huh,
we're going to get completely different results based on what we normally search. And so one of the outcomes, the unintended consequences of this is if you are a hardcore Democrat or a hardcore Republican, it's going to bring you things that you that it believes you are
right,
sympathetic to. Right. In other words, so you're now going to get fed more of your own propaganda.
Right.
There's no balancing information from the opposition or somebody's counterintuitive kind of way of thinking.
Sure.
Things. And that if you take that to its illogical end, it does. It kind of puts people into tunnels. It could be very, very, very dangerous. So I think this is a reaction to all of the recent hubbub about, wait a minute, if you're searching about Egypt from Egypt versus somebody in Phoenix,
right,
the amount of information and the difference in the information is so dramatically different.
Correct.
And very much based on who that person is.
Now, the truth of what Ken just said is absolutely 100% undeniable, because I will tell you, as the guy who creates all the video content here at Data Doctors, and you've seen him on our YouTube channel, I research the most bizarre things. And so typically, if I'm at home and my Chrome browser syncs all my searches, you go into my browser history and you're going to see some stuff that's funky in these searches. Well, my searches pull up really bizarre content. Sometimes it's stuff that's so far out there, but it's because I'm trying to look for different creative ways of doing things. Whereas if my son typed in the same search on his computer, he's going to pull up, you know, rhinoceroses, giraffes, and elephants.
Totally different stuff. So anyway, it's an ongoing issue. It's something, again, the unintended consequences of all this technology. We don't know where it's going, but this is a you know, hooray. Now Google's saying, look, you may have been looking for all this other information. So watch for that. It's going to be cool.
Yeah, Google's new search is going to be great. So how many daily downloads does it take to make it to the top of the App Store? Turns out the U.S. App Store, it's about 38,000 a day to become one of the top apps. You want to see the rest of them? DataDoctors.com/radio.
Don't forget Facebook.com/DataDoctors. That's the place that you need to go anytime you have a tech question, like Anna. Anna writes, just got a new hybrid hard drive thanks to you educating me about them. The question I have is, should I partition the drive? Should I cut it into different, and will it make it run even faster?
Let me jump on, first of all, what the hybrid hard drive is going to do. So for those of you who don't know what a hybrid hard drive is, it's a little bit of the solid-state drive, a non-movable drive, and an old drive. They kind of merge two technologies together. And where a hybrid hard drive makes your system run faster is in the loading of programs, in the starting up of applications. Partitioning the drive, and we've said this before, Brandon would probably get on his soapbox right now.
Well, first of all, partitioning will not do anything for speed. Partitioning can be used by very select, nerdy, geeky people to separate your data volume from your programs, so that if something happens under, it's this weird, convoluted way of thinking that is really designed to deal with a one small opportunity, whereas the real issue with partitioning is that that's primary partition, which is ends up being the C drive. You now made it much smaller.
Right.
You're going to run out of space on that. You're creating a problem that would never have existed if you didn't partition the drive. So don't let the nerds and geeks talk you average people into partitioning your hard drives. A bad idea.
And there's a false sense of security. Remember, if your hard drive crashes, you lose both of them because it's still one drive.
Hello. All right, coming up, when you need a remote solution to your office, or to get to your office computer, you can ask one of us for help on that. So we're going to talk about it coming up.
Hey, Grandpa, get out of my house! Verizon pulls the plug on your grandfathered data plan. We'll tell you why. It's coming up on the Data Doctors radio program. We know lots of you listen to the Data Doctors radio program so you can share our tips and tricks with your friends and family. But did you know you can share more than that? You can share us.
That's right. Just because your friends and family don't live near a Data Doctor store doesn't mean they can't experience our award-winning service, the same service you've trusted since 1988.
We can help them physically or virtually. That means we can come to them in their home, at their office, or we can remote in anywhere they are.
We only allow highly skilled, trustworthy U.S.-based technicians to come to you or to connect to your computer. No more of this,
thank you for calling tech support.
And, of course, the connection is encrypted and secure.
Now you can get Data Doctor's award-winning service anywhere you travel, and you can introduce your friends and family to our service.
Data Doctors, our service is convenient, safe, and secure, and we're based right here in the U.S. of A. That means we don't speak tech babble. We speak English.
Help is just a phone call away, 888-545-1988.
That's toll-free anywhere in the U.S., 888-545-1988.
Data Doctors, tell your friends we can fix it now.
This is the Data Doctors radio program.
Jeff asked us on Facebook, I'm getting almost daily, I assume, spoof emails from Amazon.com acknowledging cancellation of an order that I never placed. Is this some new phishing scam? Of course, the answer is yes. They're phishing for usernames, passwords, and eventually your credit card number. So remember, if you have any questions about these kinds of scams, do what Jeff did. Ask us on Facebook, facebook.com/datadoctors.
This is the Data Doctors radio program.
Oh, hey, Grandpa.
Hello, Dr. Blakeman.
Get out of my house, Grandpa.
So much for being grandfathered in, huh? If you're a Verizon customer, the news hit earlier this week. And we told you about this, by the way, last June,
That's
I believe.
Almost a year ago. We gave you almost a year's warning.
Yeah, but we didn't see this part coming. So last June on the radio program, we told you about all the companies are getting rid of these unlimited data plans.
All you can eat.
The buffet is closing, and now everyone's got to go on a diet, a data diet. Let's just call it that.
Or just order a la carte.
And there you go. Well, we didn't see this one coming. And that is that Verizon has said, even if you're grandfathered in, if you want to use their 4G LTE service,
yes.
No soup for you.
You no longer can eat from the buffet.
No, you're gone.
And you know, on its face, you look at this going, that's appalling.
Yeah.
That's ridiculous. That's not, you told me when I signed up,
not so much.
Well, as it turns out, when it comes to buffets, very few people that go to a buffet really need all of, you know.
Except Louis Anderson.
Sure, it's not anymore.
Oh, that's right. He's lost weight.
You don't need everything you see there. It's just that you like to see that. I mean, you go to these ridiculous buffets in Vegas, you know, it's a half a mile of options. It's like,
right.
Give me a break. It's not like you're going to eat all of that. And the reality is 99% or 95%, actually, in our unscientific data, it was something like 82%
right.
of you don't even come close to the 2 gigabyte ceiling that some of the basic packages have, because so many of us use our smartphones on Wi-Fi connections at home, at work. You don't really use that much data unless you're on the go all the time. So those road warriors that are out there, or the people that like to stream Pandora in the car, or those very small percentage of people that actually truly need an unlimited data plan. Now, caveat to this is 4G obviously gives you faster speed, which means you use more data in a shorter period of time. So
right.
We'll have to see what that impact is for 4G customers, but it's not as bad as it sounds.
Yeah. So let's just look at some of the averages, because this will maybe put your mind at ease. So T-Mobile customers, this is average user data consumption, 429 meg a month.
Mm-hmm. Instead of 2 gig. So that's 2,000 instead of 400. Yeah.
Right. AT&T, 345.8 megabytes a month. Sprint, 422.8. And Verizon Wireless, 369.4.
Now, does that include the 4G LTE impact, or do they have separate data for 4G LTE customers?
I don't have clear data on the 4G LTE. I'm going to get some of that in the next couple of weeks. But from everything that I've seen so far, people aren't even coming close to using those top limits.
So let's say 4G LTE is three times faster than 3G.
Right.
So you can, in the same 20 minutes, you can consume three times the data. Even at three times, you're at 900, less than a gig.
Right. You're not even coming close.
Even if you take into consideration that you can do more, you can actually consume more data, right, in the same period of time. So if you put a 3G customer next to a 4G customer and say, surf all you want for the next 10 minutes, the amount of data being used by the 4G customer clearly potentially could be a lot higher, especially if they're going to more sites and doing more downloads.
Right. Now, here's something you can do, though. If you are a smartphone user, and let's say, like in my family, we have a couple of smartphones, you know, you can share data plans. A lot of companies will give you a family or shared data plan, and so you could buy the larger data plan. And even if you bought the larger data plan at a, you know, 30 or 40 bucks a month, you're still not even going to come close because, again, look at the average consumption. Remember, that Wi-Fi usage is what's limiting how much data you're using off of the network.
Well, I mean, that's you know, if you're not doing that now, and by the way, we have a link to on our website to tips on how to reduce your exposure, like how to make sure you use as little cellular data as possible. There's some very simple things that you can follow along, so you can check out that that link there.
And remember, if you're going on a road trip this summer, find your Wi-Fi before you travel because that will save your data. You can find out how at datadoctors.com/radio.
Yeah, buddy, from our Facebook page comes another question. Sean, he asks, just wondering what a Pebble smartwatch is.
Something I really want for my birthday.
I've been reading about this new watch, but can't quite get my head around what it does. That's so great. Okay. What is a Pebble smartwatch?
Okay, first of all, I got to tell you, because I'm excited by certain things that are technology, and it's not like, you know, an Apple thing. This is the Pebble smartwatch. What this watch does, so it is a, you know those e-readers like the Kindle that have that nice, really crisp display you can read?
Yeah.
So this watch.
E-ink. Yeah.
E-ink, yeah. Has one of those displays, but it's in a watch size, a little bit larger than a traditional watch. What it does, though, is it communicates with your smartphone. So now, if you're running, you can see your email on your watch. You can get your text messages. You can see who's calling you. You can play your music. It's all controlled by the watch. And the faces are all customizable.
Well, and it's also, it can interact with your GPS for your golf game, right? You want to see what distance is to a hole on a golf course. I mean, all of those things that you'd normally use your iPhone for, actually in Android phones as well.
Right.
That's really what this is about. So imagine you're carrying a bunch of groceries, right? And your phone's ringing, whether you're a man or a woman. A man has it in their pocket. Woman has it in their purse. And
right.
Women that have seen this have said,
I don't
have to go rifling through my purse to find my phone.
Right.
I can just look to go, that's not important, and just ignore it. There's so many interesting use cases for this that everybody seems to think
would
be handy. What I'm interested to find out is if it's one of those things that it's a novelty and then it's like, you know, it's really not that useful. Having said that, this is a really interesting project that we've discovered through a website called Kickstarter. And it's a crowdfunding site. So these guys said, we have this idea. We have this invention. We need backers. And we're trying to raise $100,000. And here's our idea. And so if you want to back us, you'll get a watch if you give us this much money and so on and so forth. So they were looking for $100,000 in backing. They closed it at just over $10 million.
Million.
So many people saw this device and said, I'm in, I want in, and prepaid, including us. We've got two of them coming as soon as they come out. So
I can't wait to get my hands on
it. We'll give you a full report, Sean.
Still ahead. Snitch on the TSA. No, it's not a Springsteen song. It's an app.
And of course, up next, we'll give you our tips on how to remotely access your computers from home or office whenever you're on the road. It's all coming up here.
This is the Data Doctors radio program.
Yeah, like that. Hey, Spanky.
Yes, sir.
Why Wi-Fi when you can Y gig?
Well, what? What are you talking about?
It's the next generation of Wi-Fi. You want to learn all about it,
faster?
Don't you?
Is it better?
Y gig? What do you think?
Y gig?
Yeah.
Yeah. Holy crud, that's got to be fast.
You would think. Find out what's next at datadoctors.com/radio.
Delivering technology for your technology.
The Data Doctors Radio Program.
Remember, folks, this technology stuff, it's what we do for a living. It's in store, in office, in your home. So if you ever have a biz tech question for this segment that we like to call What Would Brandon Do?, just post it to our wall, facebook.com/datadoctors.
Yeah, and go ahead and put in there, what would Brandon do?
Yeah, because
Brandon generally would be the one to respond, but if not,
exactly.
We'll use it. He'll respond here on the air.
So the question was, I need to access my office computer when I'm on the road, trying to figure out the difference between using programs like Log Me In, Go to My PC, versus something called VPN. So the question we ask,
what would Brandon do? And this week, playing the part of Brandon Disney is Ken Colburn. And I just hit the microphone.
It's okay. Sorry. Let me do it too. All right, now we're even.
Okay.
Yeah, this one's pretty easy. You don't have to be the alpha geek in the Data Doctors empire to be able to answer this one.
So I can answer this one? Not really.
Let's not push up. I mean, so there's remote control, mm-hmm. right? Which is what programs like Log Me In and Go to My PC, so these others. You're actually remotely controlling another machine. And for most people, it's the easiest to set up. If you use LogMeIn, which is what I use, it's free. And it kind of gives you all the flexibility you need to be able to act like you're at the office.
Oh.
Without being at the office.
May I?
In the Apple world, there's something called Apple Remote Desktop.
Very similar.
Which does the same thing. There's my contribution. Okay, you can continue now.
So the VPN stands for Virtual Private Network. So if you think of the internet is what's known as a public network. Okay? So you can use the public network to create a virtual private network, VPN. So if you're a corporate user, you already know you have to jump through a bunch of hoops to be able to connect to your corporate servers. It's only allowed from certain types of machines, from certain users,
sure.
and in some cases from certain locations. So it's not like you can use your VPN from a Starbucks coffee shop in some cases if they're really, really, you know, locking things down. So it's a lot more secure of a way to get to corporate information. It's also a lot more complicated. So if you're the average small business user and you want a secure way that's not complicated, the reason I like Log Me In is once you set up the machine that you want to remote into, with the software and you create the username and all that, you can go to any internet-connected computer or device, even like an iPad, and remotely control the machine. So it's almost like you've transported yourself back to the office, like you're sitting in the chair. So whatever you could do sitting at that desk, you can do remotely, and it's absolutely free. It's very easy to use, very easy to install. And it eliminates all the complication and the, oh, crap, I didn't bring my laptop that had the VPN program on it. Now I can't remote in.
Because you can't use the iPad to do that.
Well, you can depending upon whose VPN. And I mean,
how
there are VPN clients for that. But frankly, I have the ability to use my iPad to remotely control my Windows machine only in a really sticky, I mean, not for anything other than to go look for a file or go look for an old email or something.
Sure.
Because it's not very efficient, let's just say. It can be done. Log Me In Ignite is the app. It's a $25 app, I think, at $29, something like that. And you can actually use your iPad to remotely control your desktop if you so desire. Where that comes in handy is IT guys that have to monitor mail servers and file servers and backup servers and all that stuff. That tool is really handy because they can be on an iPad and pop in and check all the servers to make sure everything's cool or start and stop processes and those kinds of things. For us average folks that want to use Word and Excel and those kinds of things remotely or what have you, I wouldn't do that. So I've got a column I wrote years ago that's still relevant today about the differences and why we like Log Me In. So check that out at datadoctors.com/radio.
Hey, Ken, do you use online reviews like Yelp or things like food spotting before you eat out?
Anyone that says they don't is lying.
Absolutely. The
you
answer,
know they do.
The answer widely today, everyone's using them. Want to know how many people are using them? We've got the answers for you. datadoctors.com/radio.
Hey, so I've been traveling quite a bit, and we'll be traveling a lot more in the coming weeks. And so I get to hang out with those fun folks at the TSA.
Yes, the people who tell you to dump your breast milk and please let me do a body search. Cavity search.
It's like, we want to make sure we're not profiling. So, Grandma, you and the kids, come over here. We're doing cavity searches.
But my son is 3 years old. It's okay. We don't want people to feel bad.
Right. And we don't want to feel like, we don't want anybody to feel like they're being profiled.
So, if you have a smartphone, an iPhone or Android specifically, there is...
Hang on. I'm going to do the... Wouldn't it be great if there was some way while you're standing in line you could...
Well, now there is. There's a smartphone app for TSA screening. It's called flyrights.org. They created this app that allows you to report when the TSA is doing stuff that just ticks you off, that's wrong, that's on every level of just, why are you doing this, you bullies? It allows you to report.
Can you take pictures?
I don't know.
Like take a picture and do something, or is it a... Because I don't know if the TSA allows a lot of pictures.
I don't think you can do pictures. Yeah. But it allows you to report the airport, the agent, and it actually, that data gets sent right up to the people at the TSA. So if there's a complaint, it is filed like...
So it's like instant complaint desk.
Instant gratification.
You mean instead of going to the one little desk that's back there that's usually got nobody there that says, if you've got a problem with the TSA, you want to report something, do it here?
See, there's an app for that now.
You can be a mominous.
Exactly. Hey, coming up, the public face of Facebook. That leads off the second hour of the program today. Stick around for that.
Up next, you've lost your password. At least you think you have. So what's going on with your PC?
We'll tell you here on the Data Doctors Radio program.
If you have kids, you have fingerprints. They touch everything. Your laptop, your smartphone, your tablets, your big screen TVs.
In my home, you can't pick up a device that isn't covered in kitty paw prints, smears, boogers.
Boogers?
Ugh.
Yeah. Never use soap and water on your electronics for obvious reasons. And for goodness sake, never, ever, ever use a glass cleaner with ammonia. It'll destroy the finish, especially on those flat panel displays.
That's why Data Doctors developed Screen Clean. As the name implies, it's safe for your screens, all of them.
Screen Clean is formulated for today's technology. LCDs, smartphones, iPads, Kindles. If you've got a screen, you need to keep it clean.
We have two convenient sizes, one for the home and office, and a travel size that's TSA approved.
Stop trying to read between the fingerprints. Get Screen Clean at the Data Doctor store nearest you.
To find the store, go to datadoctors.com and click the Find a Location button.
Data Doctors Screen Clean, because clean is clearly better.
This is the Data Doctors Radio Program.
Jose jumped in on Facebook to ask. He says he's getting a lot of view today's photo of the day from friends who say they never sent them out. Do you know why this is happening? Well, there's a new spam scam using this to get people to click on links. Your friends need to check which apps they have that they've given them permissions to. Like Twilight fans, they were being tricked back, you know, a while back into something called Truth Games. So if you ever have a question for us and you see something like that, just post it to our wall, facebook.com/datadoctors.
Tech knowledge for your technology.
Data Doctors Radio Program.
So, you know, people listen to this show for little nuggets of knowledge that they can't get anywhere else.
Yes.
Because that's all we're good for is nuggets of
knowledge.
Chicken
nuggets.
You know, the hardcore stuff we'll let the real big people deal with. We deal with little morsels of data.
Stuff that you can understand and digest.
Correctamendo. We do like small bites. So here's a small bite that I think, you know, a lot of people out there are looking for a job and they're trying to do everything they can to get just to get to the point where they can actually meet somebody.
Sure.
Right? So today, most of your engagement with a potential employer starts electronically.
Right.
So there's some things that in the past you never had to think about. In the past, it was all about your resume. Right. And that's becoming less and less the primary thing. It's one of the many things that they're going to look at, but there's a lot of little window dressing pieces that might actually kind of get an employer to think something different about you than what you would like to portray, specifically when it comes to who you whose email system you use and add and use to submit your resumes electronically.
So years ago, you know, when you apply for a job, you would mail your resume into the HR department. These days, people email things in because it's convenient, it's quick, it's the same day, it's instantaneous. And a lot of times when companies are looking for people, those emails will flood their inbox instantaneously. Unless...
Well, there's actually been some studies out there. There's some data that suggests that if you're using a Yahoo or AOL account as your primary, A, tech-savvy people are going to look at that as being, okay, that's probably somebody that's not tech-savvy. And let's face it, every position in this world nowadays, your ability to be tech-friendly and tech-savvy is going to benefit you virtually in every case, right? So if they look at this and go, okay, this person still has an AOL account, they're probably still in the 90s.
Right. They're going to look at that because I look at that. Even with friends who still have AOL accounts, I go, why are you guys using this? It's stupid.
Well, it's not. It's just an old way.
Right.
It's basically you're showing your hand. Here's a bigger issue, though. Those Yahoo, Hotmail, and AOL accounts, especially Hotmail and Yahoo, a lot of mail servers are going to actually add a few spam scores because of the domain, because there's been so much spam generated from those networks.
Mm.
Your resume may not even get to the HR department because you're using a Yahoo account, because you're using Hotmail, because you're using AOL.
It could get blocked before it even gets there.
It's possible, just because of the amount of spam that's been used, or the number of times that spam accounts have been set up on those networks.
So let's talk about our favorite, probably the smartest email you could use these days, and that's a Google product called Gmail.
Well, not only is it the best email client for you to use as a human being, it's going to signal to people that you're potentially going to be interviewing with that, okay, well, if they've got a Gmail account, they probably a little more tech savvy, right? As opposed to, well, they won't necessarily make a decision based on that, but I can assure you most people, without even thinking about it, they see an AOL account, they're going, probably older person that's a little behind the curve when it comes to tech.
Right.
So keep that in mind. If you don't, it's just another reason to go and get, it's free. Go get a Gmail account, especially if you're out there and you're trying to present the best possible picture of yourself digitally. I think there's no downside to doing that, because we know just from the data that's out there that these other domains could actually get you into some trouble.
Let's talk about some of the side benefits to what a Gmail account does, though. It opens up for you a lot of things on Google that you may or may not be using. For example, Google Plus, which not a lot of people use, but it allows you access. You can create your YouTube channel based on your Gmail account. Once you have that account, all these Google services are now really at your...
Yeah, Google Docs. I mean, all those things.
Right. And what's the phone service that they have? Google Voice.
Google Voice.
In fact, we got to talk about that next week.
Yeah.
You've opened yourself up to a world of technology that says, hey, I'm smart. I know what I'm doing. I've evolved as a person, and you want me for your company.
So, by the way, that particular discussion about those best email addresses to use, it's part of a 12-item tip on PC World. We'll post that on our website, and it was in the newsletter as well. It's 12 ways to make your online profile work for you. If you're in the market, if you're trying to get to that next position, or even if you're employed and you're trying to get to the next level, I think it's a great article you ought to consider. So check that out, datadoctors.com/radio.
And remember, if you like all the tips, tricks, and warnings, and all the other great stuff we give you, we can deliver it right to your inbox. All you've got to do is subscribe to our weekly newsletter. Go to datadoctors.com/radio, look for the newsletter box, and then type in your email address.
You know the drill. Hey, again, Facebook, facebook.com/datadoctors. It's a place for you to ask any question anytime. We do our best to try to keep on top of them. Sometimes you get a little behind. Please have patience with us. But we'll always try to follow up with any of those questions. Mark asked an old school question. I haven't actually had this question asked in a long, long time. So obviously Mark is into working on his own computers.
Sure.
He says, I have a 300-watt power supply on an older HP computer. What advantage would there be to putting a 450-watt power supply on it?
I know. You'll get 150 more watts of power.
Thank you, Mr. Wizard. First of all, the power supply is an actual component inside the computer. It's usually got a fan on it. It's where their power plug plugs in. So what that does is it takes the 110 direct current, or excuse me, alternating current, I'm sorry, out of the wall. That's what you have in your wall. It's really high voltage, right? And it converts it down to small levels of direct current. So that's why when you open a computer and play with it, you don't get shocked.
Right.
It's a very low voltage. So this power supply is what basically takes and converts this, and it provides power to all the individual components inside your computer. So let's say you only have a hard drive and a CD-ROM. And you have nothing else as far as drives or external components, that kind of thing. You don't need a whole lot of wattage for just those two devices. So the more drives and devices you're going to put in there, or let's say you're going to have a special card that allows you to have a bunch of FireWire and USB ports,
right,
which are going to power other devices. So it's the number of devices you have to power that really comes into play. The actual usage on a per cup product basis pretty low. So if you're not changing anything out other than the power supply, there's probably going to be no advantage. But there's no downside to having that extra wattage either.
Hey, remember, as the show rolls on today, if you miss any of it, you can always find the stuff we're talking about at datadoctors.com/radio, including the podcast.
And if you ever have a tech problem, you need human help with it, that's what we're here for. All across the country, we deal with technology problems for a living, so we're experts at this stuff.
That's right. We can help you in our stores, in your home, at your business. We can even remote in right over the internet to help you.
Kicking off hour number two, Facebook's public face. What does going public mean to you as the user? Sit tight.
BRB.
Bruh.
This is the Data Doctors radio program.
Data Doctors report to the studio. You're live in 2 minutes.
This is the Data Doctors 2 Minute Drill.
Hey, let's do an old school point counterpoint, you know, like Chevy Chase and Jane Curtin.
Can I be Jack Kilpatrick and you be Shayna Alexander?
However you want to do it.
Okay.
Okay, here's Facebook's IPO.
Yes.
Does it mean the end of privacy? So what's going to happen to privacy now that Facebook has gone public? Your position is that we're doomed.
We're already giving out our information. We've had the ability to block our information since Facebook has been around. People still do not know how to set their privacy settings. That has not changed. Just because it's gone public doesn't mean it's your information's
but,
more public.
But the fact that they're going public, is it your position that the privacy situation is going to get worse or better?
The privacy situation isn't going to change because people have to get their head out of their collective rear ends and set their privacy controls.
Well, no, but that's not the issue. You're skirting the issue. Jane, you ignorant slut. Saturday Night Live.
Public.
Is it going to get worse or better?
It's going to get worse.
And I say it's going to get better because they're a publicly traded company now. The shareholders are going to be part of the decision factor in this, right? In that, if there's a negative cloud hanging over a public company, what happens to the stock price?
Goes down, not
right.
Good.
So I think we have a possibility of seeing the privacy situation get better for users as a result of them going public.
So you contend, Shayna.
Yes.
That things are going to get better just because now they're open to public scrutiny and those shareholders are Facebook users as well.
Well, not just that. It is now they have another boss to report to.
I like your thinking, Colburn.
Yeah.
The 2 minute drill. Stand by.
Cue intro music in 5 seconds.
4, 3, 2.
Live from Data Doctors HQ.
This is the Data Doctors radio program, delivering tech knowledge for your technology.
What time is it?
It's time for lunch.
It's time to listen, laugh, and learn. Welcome to the Data Doctors radio program.
Each and every week, we help thousands of you in our stores all across the country, in your offices, your homes, everywhere. Then we bring that experience right here to the radio to help you.
We are the Data Doctors du jour. Ken and Spanky. Brandon is on assignments. We're here to provide you education and entertainment like we do every week. We like to call it
edutainment. Hey, they're the most connected company in the world, and now Wall Street is in bed with them. Will Facebook change now that they're a publicly held company?
Build a better mousetrap, make a better password. So what stinks worse, your password or your password creation policy?
And is your printer storing your personal data? That's this week's help.
Data Doctors radio program.
A lot of people with Permigrin over in Facebook land.
Oh, you know what? They don't need Botox up there in Palo Alto.
You know, everyone that I know that has a Facebook.com or an FB.com email address, for some reason, none of them have been communicating with me recently.
Yeah, they're all busy.
I think they're all on a yacht somewhere.
So if you've lived under a rock or lived in a rock where you might not get this information.
Oh, you would still get this.
Well, you get this information. Big week for Facebook. First of all, the boy CEO, Mark Zuckerberg, turned 28 this week, and he got richer when they went public on Friday. And so Facebook has now become the most connected public company in the world.
And it's really not that big of a company.
They're tiny, tiny.
You know what's really, really crazy about this? All this hype, the biggest IPO in history, whatever. Zuckerberg still has controlling interest of the company.
That's so phenomenal.
Even though all this money's being brought in.
Yeah.
So this is an atypical situation where the founder, the CEO, is still the controlling interest in the company. So essentially it means if he decides Facebook's going in this direction, even with the shareholders saying we don't like that decision, there's nothing they can do. The shareholders can't vote against the CEO because CEO has too much of the controlling interest.
Now, I want to jump on. So we're going to talk a little bit about what could change now that Facebook's a publicly held company. And obviously, based on what Ken said, not much. For those of you who complain about Facebook this and Facebook that, I want to say from looking from the 30,000 foot view, I think Mark Zuckerberg has done a pretty damn good job with what he's created. We all use it.
This is the absolute traditional love-hate relationship, right?
Yeah, yeah.
It is. Everybody not everybody. Lots and lots of people are complaining about Facebook and the changes. I get that because these guys change everything more often than we change our underwear, or at least you.
Yeah.
And so that's the world they live in.
Right.
And change is good.
Right. But here's the thing.
Gordon Gekko.
How many of you, though you complain about it, have taken the needle out of your arm and stopped using it?
And how many of you that said, that's it, I'm fed up, I'm done, I'm leaving Facebook forever.
Right.
And I'm looking, there they are again.
Yeah, their profiles are still there, and they're still active.
Yeah.
So how could Facebook change, Ken? Now that they're a publicly held company, what are some of the big things that should be on our radar?
Well, here's what I'm thinking. I mean, they raised money not because they all want to get rich because they're not selling out. They're basically raising capital, to me, for what already happened with Instagram, and that is for acquisitions.
So what's the big company that they're going to go after next?
Well, I don't know that it's going to be a big company. I think it's going to be a myriad of little companies that we'll never even hear about unless you listen to the Data Doctors radio program.
That help bolster the
overall strategy of where they're trying to go.
Okay.
The big problem that Facebook has right now is that, A, they don't charge their users for use of the network. So they make all of their money from advertisers.
Mm-hmm.
And they're struggling with getting people to embrace Facebook as an advertising platform that actually works in light of the surveys of people saying, oh, no, I'll never click on those ads.
Right.
That's not why most people use Facebook. So one of the things that I think you are going to absolutely see change is the integration of posts that are actually advertisers, kind of like the sponsored posts in Twitter.
Mm-hmm.
That's you can bet your entire fortune on that. I mean, it's already starting to happen now.
Right.
I think you're going to see what they have to do is figure out how to integrate marketers' advertising messages seamlessly into the network so that people actually do click on these messages. A la what's happening with Pinterest, Twitter, everything
sure.
else. They've got to figure out how to monetize this or else this is just going to be one of those big overhyped IPOs. And, where's the beef?
I think the biggest challenge with Facebook ads is not that there are ads on Facebook. It's that the people who are creating these ads don't know how to create ads that people want to click on.
No. No, you think about it. The ads are off away from what you use Facebook for.
Okay, they're off to the side.
You have to go off the freeway, right?
Yeah, okay.
To look at the billboard, right? Most people are going to stay on the freeway. They're not going to jump off the freeway, go look at the billboard and go, yeah, it wasn't anything.
Right.
Or they'll see the billboard and they go, yeah, whatever. I got tunnel vision. I'm going down the road.
Right, so if they start piping it into your newsfeed and it's not a newsfeed you can opt out of, now they got you.
It's going to be a sponsored post. You're starting to see integration of that. The other thing they've got to figure out is how to monetize mobile traffic.
Mm.
Think about that. There are no ads. There's no way for them to make money off of the mobile user, and that is becoming a bigger and bigger part of this. So they have a lot of challenges that they have to overcome, and I think that's why you're going to see they're going to find these unique little companies that have created these little tools that they can slowly integrate into Facebook, and you can count on it being a complete constant change platform and landscape for all you Facebook users. So those of you that hate every time Facebook makes a change, buckle up, sweetheart. It's about to get more worser.
Where's my partner in crime?
I don't know. Thank goodness. I'm not going to participate in this.
Geek Speak of the Week.
It is that portion of the show where we try to bring you a little morsel of the vernacular that you might want to use in conversation to sound, somewhat technical.
Geek Speak of the Week.
It is our Geek Speak of the Week. This week's term is I pause? And most of you are either guilty of or have been a victim of the I pause.
I've been behind the I pause.
Behind the I pause?
Yeah. That's the moment in time when the light turns green and the driver in front of you has to look up from his iPod or iPhone
before consumed, right? And then there's that pause, and then usually they're looking up because you honk your horn.
Yeah. I'm getting out of my way. Hey, still ahead. Is it your password that stinks or your password policy? We'll tell you how to make it better.
Plus, pay to post, the truth about Facebook charging you as to use the service.
It's coming up here on the Data Doctors radio program. Sit tight. We know lots of you listen to the Data Doctors radio program so you can share our tips and tricks with your friends and family. But did you know you can share more than that? You can share us.
That's right. Just because your friends and family don't live near a Data Doctor store doesn't mean they can't experience our award-winning service, the same service you've trusted since 1988.
We can help them physically or virtually. That means we can come to them in their home, at their office, or we can remote in anywhere they are.
We only allow highly skilled, trustworthy U.S.-based technicians to come to you or to connect to your computer. No more of this,
thank you for calling tech support.
And, of course, the connection is encrypted and secure.
Now you can get Data Doctor's award-winning service anywhere you travel, and you can introduce your friends and family to our service.
Data Doctors, our service is convenient, safe, and secure, and we're based right here in the U.S. of A. That means we don't speak tech babble. We speak English.
Help is just a phone call away, 888-545-1988.
That's toll-free anywhere in the U.S., 888-545-1988.
Data Doctors, tell your friends we can fix it now.
This is the Data Doctors radio program.
Hey, Spanky, Claudia hit us on Facebook. She said, there was a segment I saw on TV that gave a website that offered free training on software. For example, I want to learn CorelDRAW. And they had it on this website, and it was great, but I lost the web address. Does anyone know what this is?
Claudia, I think we do. It's Lynda, LYNDA.com, and they are a subscription-based service, but they do have some free content. Remember, if you ever have a question about something you saw or a tech question, just do what Claudia did. Post it to our wall, Facebook.com/DataDoctors.
This is the Data Doctors radio program.
So, yeah, I mean, that Lynda, I got to tell you, L-Y-N-D-A, Lynda.com. Just go see it.
It is rich in information.
If you've ever wanted to learn a piece of software, forget about reading a book, go check this out.
I once had, and I actually used it, I once had a question about how to do something, called my friend Jim in New York, and Jim said, oh, go to this site. And I used the content, and I learned how to do something in Photoshop that I didn't know how to do.
Bada bing, bada boom.
Very cool.
All right, so passwords, an essential part of security, right? On the web, at work, on your computer, on your smartphone, on everything, right?
Yeah, these days, passwords are essential.
They're incredibly important as far as our digital lives. That is until we get the chips in our heads or whatever. So there was an interesting study and some new literature out there that suggests that all of these well-meaning IT guys that force certain kinds of things to happen with passwords are actually counterproductive, actually making passwords less secure because they're forcing certain policies that really don't make the thing more secure. It actually makes it less secure.
Right. So this developer, Cameron Morris, he claims or really says that passwords stink because typically the people who create the policies focus on composition, which can't measure something we always talk about, the strength of the password. And the strength of the password is super important.
And it's the easiest way to create a very difficult to crack password is to make it longer. So if it's really long, but you can remember it, that's better than a short, very hard to remember password. Because what happens with a really hard-to-remember password is then people start writing it on sticky notes, and they put it on
next to their computer.
Right, as like, so that I can remember my password. So the other thing is, those of you that believe forcing your users to change their passwords every 30 days is a good idea. I know that from a purely technical standpoint, it sounds like a good idea. From a human interaction standpoint, you're encouraging people to use weaker and weaker passwords because they can't remember all of this stuff. And because they can't use the password they used last month, they start cheating, and it's just It's not necessarily a good thing to do.
Ken, there's a website that I use that requires, their password requirements are an uppercase, a lowercase, a funny character. And do you know, every time I go to that website, I have to do a reset of my password because I can never remember what they forced me to use.
So the tip that I'll give you today, that I've given multiple times before, think of very easy to remember normal things that you think of. So in our case, and of course, don't use this, and of course, we don't use this, but the password, www.datadoctors.com, the two dots are special characters, and it's a really long password. And so, and then I could do www.datadoctors.com/, and then the name of the website. And so now it's this like really long thing with a lot of special characters, but it's easy for me to remember.
Because all you have to do is go, oh, I'm on this website. Now I just put in that password.
Yeah, no, but don't do that.
Right.
Don't use that method. And you can integrate, you know, zeros where an O would be and a 3 where an E would be, those kinds of things. But the big thing is make it something you can remember. C:\Windows, right? That's actually a pretty secure password.
Yeah, I'm thinking about it. In fact, let me see how secure that is. So you said C:\Backslash. I'm doing this right now.
Windows.
You're
going to analyze my password?
I'm analyzing it right now for you.
Please do not use these passwords that we're talking about publicly on the air, folks.
Okay, well, just for curiosity, it would take less than a day. No, that is not right. 36 billion patterns. Wow, that's a huge. That would take a zillion years to crack.
Well, I mean, it depends on who and what, and there's a million things going on. But, I mean, C:\Windows\System.
Right.
I mean, you can add whatever, or Ken, or whatever. Just use easy to remember long strings of text that you already use in your daily computer life. Just make sure that they're long, 15 to 16 characters minimum. And you don't have to have all the special characters and everything in there to make it secure. You can have 20 zeros, right? And that's actually going to be more secure than an 8-character password with letters and numbers.
One of my friends has 3 kids, and he uses a first name, birth date, and that's his password. So it's long, it's got numbers, it's
so
stupid.
So now all they're going to do is look at all your friends and start cracking this guy's password.
They don't know who it is. I actually don't have any friends,
oh,
okay? I was lying. Hey, it's TV that watches you, or while you're watching it, and ads can interact with you. It's something new from Microsoft, and it's kind of creepy, and it involves the Xbox Kinect. And
It's coming.
So check it out, datadoctors.com/radio.
So there's a lot of people have been asking us, is Facebook going to start charging me to post information on my Facebook wall?
And the answer is yes and no.
Well, no for 90% of you.
Right. So if you're not super popular and you want your stuff seen by everybody, they're testing this new thing called pay to post.
But not in this country, like in New Zealand or
something, right? And then if it's popular there, it'll come over here. And so what they're doing is they're saying, look, if you want to pay a small fee, we will make sure that your posts show up in all of your friends' news feeds.
Well, wait a minute. Wouldn't it already happen now?
No, because only about 12% of the people actually see your stuff.
And again, guys, we've said this on the show over and over again. The Facebook algorithm is basically designed to keep you in the loop with people that you've recently communicated with. So somebody you haven't had any engagement with, you didn't click on like, you didn't post anything, you didn't say anything, you didn't share in the last 2 or 3 weeks, they're going to start rolling off your newsfeed. That's why those people disappeared. They do appear on that little ticker on the right. Everybody that you deal with appears over there. But the most recent, I mean, the people that you've engaged with over the last couple of weeks. So here's the little tip. If you're going to try to get people back into the loop, go manually go to their page once.
Just going to say that.
Click on like, share something, do it. Engage with them at some level.
It just takes a like to do it.
Yeah.
So it's not that difficult.
Quick way to get those people back into your news stream.
Yeah. Or you can just pay to make sure that they see your stuff, which
don't do it.
Kind of silly. Yeah. Unless you're really vain and think you're so witty that they all want to see it.
Yeah, just what we need. Another one of those. Oh, wait, those are called legislators.
Yes, exactly. Hey, on the other side of the break, your personal info is everywhere, but your printer too? That's this week's help.
Plus, have you ever lied on a resume? A tech company CEO did, and now he's in trouble.
Yahoo!
Forever.
This is the Data Doctors radio program.
You know, if you're thinking, hey, you know, out of the 2 hours of listening, I actually get, you know, 10 minutes of good quality information from this show, and you'd like more of that? It's easy. You can get a consolidated version of what we're thinking this week, every week, in your inbox. Our tips, our tricks, our warnings, all right into your inbox from our newsletter. Go to datadoctors.com/radio, look for the newsletter box. You know the drill. Put in your address. We'll send it to you.
Self-deprecating humor not included.
But
delivering technology for your technology.
The Data Doctors Radio Program.
Anytime you have a question for us, you can hop on Facebook.com/Data Doctors like Julie did. She said she has an old HP scanner fax printer that's an all-in-one. Is it true that it stores your personal information somewhere inside and you should remove it before you get rid of it? I called HP. They denied it. Have no information on how to get rid of any potentially stored information in the memory. So therefore, Julie, that becomes this week's...
Help, I need somebody. Help, not just anybody. Help, you know I need someone. Help.
So yeah, there have been many stories over the years, including stories that we've actually helped the media with, that basically expose the fact that corporate scanner, copier, printers have hard drives that make copies of virtually everything.
Because they're computers.
Well, they are computers, but they're basically, they're dealing with high volumes of information. So in order to do that, they have a static storage device in them. And it's, you know, it's cost effective to do that on these big, you know, really expensive printers. So as a result of that, a lot of people are starting to, you know, become aware of the fact that, hey, my printer might actually have personal information in it. And unfortunately, corporately, you take your personal tax returns and you go, I just make copies at the office.
Ooh.
You don't know if your company or the leasing company or whoever, you have no idea what's going to happen to that hard drive. If you're a business owner out there, don't forget this very important thing. You need to protect your employees because, you know, all kinds of personal information has been copied or scanned on that corporate scanner or copier. And just take a moment, have the hard drive removed from that device before it goes back, or have whoever you're working with, the copier company, do a secure deletion of that hard drive before it gets recycled or goes on to its next life.
You know, Ken, sadly, that's how the picture of the photocopy of my rear end wound up on the internet.
Right.
I was very shocked. I saw it everywhere. It was splashed.
Even with the widescreen, it wouldn't be a fit.
The hate continues.
So now, when it comes to your personal, like, so a lot of printers are multifunction printers, right?
Right.
Or all-in-ones, right? So they do copy, they do scan. So a lot of people are now starting to question, does that mean my home scanner copier can do the same thing? And the good news is no, it doesn't have a hard drive like those big corporate scanners and copiers.
Right. It has RAM in it. It has like little chips, little memory chips that remember a certain amount of data because let's say you're sending something to the printer and at the same time your kid is sending something to the printer or you run out of paper and you got a fax coming in,
right.
It stores that stuff in the memory so that when you put paper in, it can just continue on and you don't lose what was sent.
It's called a print queue. Q-U-E-U-E. Q-U-E.
Nice spelling. Yes. A print queue.
A print queue. So this is known as volatile memory, meaning that whatever is in that memory will be lost if you turn off the computer.
Kind of like yours.
Or turn off the printer. So as soon as you unplug the printer, whatever was sitting in there that was supposed to print, it's going to be gone. It can be refed from the computer's print queue as well. But the fact that you're going to be taking it in to recycle or sell, you don't have to worry about that. Now, where you may want to be careful is that some, especially like fax-based systems, will ask you a bunch of information. So you might have your fax number and your name and some other stuff programmed into the settings for that printer. That's about as far as it goes. So if you want to be sure, you want to make sure that there's absolutely nothing in there, your fax machine number, all that stuff, just go into the settings like it's a brand new machine to see, you know, just poke around there like you're investigating to see if, there's some information in there. Let's get rid of this.
It's very easy.
Or you can do a factory reset and generally all that stuff goes away.
Yeah, it's usually a one button push. Hey, if you like Google Chrome, you might like their new feature. It's called Tabs to Go. Now you can access the tabs that you use on your desktop version of Chrome while you're out and about on your Android device. That's pretty smart. So now you can see and do everything just as if you're sitting in front of your desktop computer. Of course, we got a link to it and everything we talk about, datadoctors.com/radio.
You know, a previous geek speak term that we used many years ago to introduce this concept was cut the cord.
Yes.
I think more and more people now are hearing that term. So, of course, you heard it here first. But cutting the cord refers to the fact that you no longer pay the cable company or the telephone company for television services, for telephone services, all that stuff.
Right.
You've gone completely internet-based for all of that consumption of content.
Correct. So in the Moskowitz house, that would be my house, we've been slowly making the transition for, Ken, what would you say, about a year now?
Yeah, just testing things.
And we're testing things out, and we're seeing which devices work, which don't. And should it be Roku? Should it be the Apple TV? And as I've used both devices, I have to say that I've finally come up with a definitive favorite of
both
the two devices.
Which one?
And I'm going to shock you, the listener, and you, Ken Colburn, when I tell you what it is. Now you won't be shocked because you know I just said I'm going to shock you.
I'm not shocked.
Hands down, it's the Roku.
Why?
So Roku allows me access to something that Apple TV doesn't.
Which is?
Hulu Plus. And Hulu Plus is an NBC, ABC, and Fox got together, and they created this website that you can pay $7.99 a month and get all of their TV shows delivered to you. You can watch them.
Delivered?
Right to the Roku box. You can just pick the shows you want to watch and just go click, 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 I want to watch this.
So you have access to the whole library.
To the whole
you
library.
Stream it live.
Apple won't do that because they would be cannibalizing their iTunes market.
You mean the iTunes
store.
Television, right?
Where right, where they download stores, where you pay to watch them. Apple has a lot to lose.
It's a pay-as-you-go service, not the all-you-can-eat.
So if you're looking to cut the cord, my suggestion right now is the Roku box. It is still the leader in my estimation.
When we come back, how long tech can save your high-tech?
How low-tech.
Oh, how low-tech can save your high-tech.
He's got bad eyes for his age.
How long?
And breaking up is hard to do, but can you really break up with an online service?
Yeah, too long. You go home now.
It's coming up here on the Data Doctors Radio program, and I will get Ken's eyes fixed during the commercial break.
If you have kids, you have fingerprints. They touch everything. Your laptop, your smartphone, your tablets, your big screen TVs.
In my home, you can't pick up a device that isn't covered in kitty paw prints, smears, boogers.
Boogers?
Ugh.
Yeah. Never use soap and water on your electronics for obvious reasons. And for goodness sake, never, ever, ever use a glass cleaner with ammonia. It'll destroy the finish, especially on those flat panel displays.
That's why Data Doctors developed Screen Clean. As the name implies, it's safe for your screens, all of them.
Screen Clean is formulated for today's technology. LCDs, smartphones, iPads, Kindles. If you've got a screen, you need to keep it clean.
We have two convenient sizes, one for the home and office, and a travel size that's TSA approved.
Stop trying to read between the fingerprints. Get Screen Clean at the Data Doctor store nearest you.
To find the store, go to datadoctors.com and click the Find a Location button.
Data Doctors Screen Clean, because clean is clearly better.
This is the Data Doctors Radio Program.
Leanne wanted to say thanks. Thanks to our expertise and newsletter, she was able to help a friend who laundered her iPhone. The rice baby really works. She went from stressed to happy. So what's Leanne talking about? If you drop your smartphone in water, take the battery out, stick it in a container of uncooked rice and put it somewhere warm to let the rice suck the moisture out. And we've got a video for that, too. So you want to connect with us, have a question? Facebook.com/DataDoctors.
Tech knowledge for your technology. Data Doctors Radio Program.
So, you know, earlier we were talking about Facebook's IPO, and people are going, everything's going to change now. And,
Facebook's going to suck. I'm done.
I'm getting out. And, you know, most people, when they say that, they deactivate their account.
That's pulling the plug.
No. They temporarily turn off usage of, right? So look at it this way. It's you have a retail store in a mall.
Yes.
Deactivating the account is you're closing the door, you're locking it, you're shutting everything off, you're turning off the lights, and you're walking away like you're going on summer vacation.
Like an H&R Block.
Yeah. Like they go away. Okay. That's deactivating.
Okay.
You didn't take anything out of the store. You didn't remove anything. It's all there. People can still peer through the window, right? And see that there's stuff in there. That's not the same as deleting your account. Deleting your account means you move all the stuff out of the store. You give up the keys. You're done. You're completely out. No, when they look, they see nothing. It's just a big open space. Huge difference.
Sure.
Most people deactivate their accounts. And the Facebook makes it very hard and very hard for you to even figure out how to delete your account because they don't want you to leave, obviously. But a lot of people do. I mean, if they just made it like, boom, you're done, and it deletes everything, and it's all gone, and then you change your mind, you're going to go, I wish I hadn't done that.
Yeah.
So they set it up so that that's most likely what's going to happen to you, so they can entice you in. They try to guilt you out of actually leaving anyway.
Well, think about it. All of these social networks and any online service, what is their goal? Their goal is to keep you there because...
Well, yeah. I mean, if you leave, then that's the whole point of the network, right? You are the product being sold to the advertisers. So if you want to properly, truly delete your account, you have to go through this whole different number of steps, which we have a post on our website, datadoctors.com/radio. Again, if you don't really mean it, don't do this one that we're telling you.
Yeah, because this one's forever.
This one will get rid of your stuff and get rid of your profile and all that stuff on Facebook, and you won't be able to turn it back on. Okay, but there's one thing you have to keep in mind if you are going to go down this route. Facebook, even after you say, yes, I mean to delete this, yes, 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 whatever, you go through this, they hang on to everything for 2 more weeks. And their measuring stick is if you don't log into Facebook within that 2 weeks, then it's gone. If you log into Facebook again within that 2 weeks, they're going, aha!
We got you.
No, we thought you were kidding.
And they reactivate.
And they extend the amount of time that it's going to take for it to go away.
Interesting.
Right? And so the reason we're telling you this is, go ahead and raise your hands there. How many of you, when you open up a browser right now, you're on your Facebook page? You don't have to log in. That's in your browser's cache. The username and password is remembered, and it automatically logs you in. So follow me on this.
I know where you're going.
You already smell what
I smell this one.
You smell what I'm stepping in.
Yep.
Here. Okay. If you meant to delete and you did not clear your browser cache, you would inadvertently signal to Facebook you didn't mean it.
Because next time you launched your browser...
Or your kids, or your wife,
your kids,
or whoever else.
Right. Bing. Facebook gets the little ping from you. Ah,
yes.
They're still here.
They logged back in. They don't want it to be deactivated.
So you never go away then.
Well, you could end up not... You may think
right.
You've gotten rid of it, and you haven't. So be very, very careful. Again, if that's where you're at, and I don't believe you, most of you saying, yeah, I'm sick of this, I'm getting out, I'm calling BS.
Yeah.
But if you truly are looking to get out, we've got the link on our website, datadoctors.com/radio. But just remember, if you get rid of your Facebook account, you can't ask us questions on Facebook anymore.
Neener, neener, neener. Hey, if you hate your morning commute, guess what? You might not have to be driving much longer. Find out 5 ways a self-driving car can make your life better. Go to datadoctors.com/radio to check it out for yourself.
So, Spanky, did I ever tell you that I once was on a space shuttle mission and I was the one that actually discovered the dark side of the moon?
Well, did you know that I have a master's degree?
You do?
Yeah, Masters of the Universe.
Very nice.
Thank you. Have you ever lied on a resume?
That's the ticket.
Have you ever told a mistruth? Because if you lied on your resume and you are, let's say, the CEO of a tech company like, I don't know, Yahoo, could that come back to bite you in the butt?
I'm going to say yes.
And it did. And the CEO of Yahoo steps down over resume gate. And in case you guys, again, this is one of those, if you've lived under a rock, it's one of those stories that that just kind of blew up in the social sphere, seemed to be really where it took off. Scott Thompson, he stepped down. He left the company when basically it was discovered that there was a slight anomaly on his resume.
And what was that anomaly?
He lied about a degree.
Some educational component.
Yeah, and so therefore, it made him not so popular with the people at Yahoo. So,
and this is a company that's already in flux and turmoil, right? This was the interim CEO, right, that was brought
correct.
In because the other CEO stepped down, and it's like, who wants part of this?
Right. Here's the thing. You got to remember today, folks, if you can hear our voices, please pay attention to this. If you put something on the internet or if something on the internet is said about you, remember that stuff is like glue. It is there forever. And if you think that people can't do a little bit of checking to find out whether what you say you do is true or what you did or where you went to school, think again, because they can find out everything about you. Everything. It's
well,
on the internet.
Well, I mean, resumes are electronic these days, right?
Yep.
And even if it's a paper resume, the ability to go and research, wait a minute, let's go to that college.
Right.
It's so easy to uncover these untruths. You know what's amazing? How do you get to be a CEO by... I mean, how do you even get that far if that's how you conduct yourself?
He lied his way to the top. Maybe.
Maybe.
Now he's lying his way to the bottom. Hey, if you want to stay up to date with the latest, plus connect with us whenever you have a question, it's easy. Just go to facebook.com/datadoctors and we'll help.
Of course, if you missed any of today's program, you can just go to datadoctors.com/radio and download the podcast.
And if you ever have a tech problem you need human help with, all across the country, we deal with technology problems for a living. We're experts at this stuff.
And we can help you live and in person at our stores. We can help you via the what they call that internet thing.
Mm-hmm.
We can help you any way you'd like. datadoctors.com. And click on the store locator.
And until next week, we can chat on Facebook. It's the Data Doctors, Ken and Spanky. Time to reboot.
This is the Data Doctors Radio program.